This is Ray Hanania's Column Commentary Podcast, which is available on Middle East issues and issues of American politics. You can get information at thearabdailynews.com for the Middle East side and at illinoisnewsnetwork.com for my mainstream political column. An interview with Hiba Fisher of Kerning Cultures Podcast. Hiba, you and I met really online a number of weeks ago, I really come to enjoy your podcast on Kerning Cultures, and I really am especially excited that you and members of your group have agreed to write and post at the Arab Daily News, and I think that people that are familiar with the Arab Daily News can go there and see some interesting posts, and podcasts that you've done. But I thought it'd be interesting to let them know a little bit about who you are as a person and what Kerning Cultures is. What does the name mean? And as I had told you before, when I was looking for podcasts about the Middle East, there were a lot of them, but yours didn't jump out as being one that I thought, this is about the Middle East. So kind of, first of all, tell us a little bit about, who you are and why you're doing what you're doing. And then let's talk a little bit about your podcast and the group of writers that you work with.
Sure. Well, first, thank you for those very kind words. I hope we're doing a good job. So my name's Hiba Fisher. I'm Egyptian American, and I just moved back to the States from Dubai. My family's made the Gulf our home for about 15 years, going on a little longer now. And my personal background is I study global development studies at the University of Virginia here in the States. So it's basically anthropology. I built microfinance and business education programs in the U.S. and in the Gulf. And I had a sort of quarter-life crisis about a year and a half ago.
You're so young. I don't know if you can have a midlife crisis. Good news.
where I'd been going very strong on a particular career path, right. And I sort of woke up one day and thought, I actually don't know what my purpose on this planet could be, and maybe I should take some time to think about it. And so I spent a couple of months just being very introspective and trying to think of what my strengths are and my weaknesses and where I think I could offer something to this world, and came up with the idea for the podcast, Kerning Cultures, as a way to capture the depth that the Middle East has to offer in the ways we're not seeing reflected in mainstream media, which, of course, you can attest to as an Arab journalist in the U.S. It's anything about the Middle East is heavily politicized, and what's really sadly ironic is even the content coming out of the Middle East is also political, and when other issues like culture or history are covered, they're very shallowly reported, in my sort of, haughty opinion. And so we wanted to create content that actually moved us and to tell stories that reflected our lived experiences in the region. I've been obsessed with podcasts since college, but all the podcasts that I listen to are coming from the U.S., and so I wanted stories that were a bit more relevant and relatable.
There aren't a lot of podcasts, are there? There are some, but there don't seem to be a lot, that address an American audience in English. There are a lot of Middle Eastern podcasts, from the Arab media, but there doesn't seem to be a lot. You do kind of fill a void that's really big. There's a big void there.
I think so. And actually, our target audience is not, it's not so much straight Americans. And it took us a long time to figure out who we were telling these stories for. But it's for people like you and I. So it's for people who identify strongly with the Middle East, wherever they may be currently residing. And then kind of a secondary audience would be those who want to learn more about the region. But we're really trying to reintroduce the region to ourselves through rich and intelligent and accessible stories. And you asked about the name Kerning Cultures.
Yeah, so I was just going to ask, because when you what does it mean? It doesn't automatically make you think of Middle East culture or the things that you were talking about.
No, it doesn't.
I'm not being critical. I'm just saying that, what was the thinking behind that, and how did you come up with the name?
So it took a while, and I'll be the first to tell you I'm not good at coming up with names at all. So it was actually my best friend, who has an advertising company in Pakistan, and he's amazing with these types of things. And so he thought about it for a little while and came back to us and said, you know what, you should call it. You should call it Kerning Cultures. And when he explained it to me, I thought the metaphor was really beautiful. So kerning is a process in typography, and it's something they teach you in design school. It's the sizing of spaces between letters in a font, mm-hmm. so that you can read the word more clearly, and so it's aesthetically pleasing. And the metaphor of cultures kerning through these stories was really quite powerful. Plus, certainly, and I'm sure he had the foresight for this, but from an advertising perspective, when you type kerning in the iTunes store or any podcasting platform, we're the only ones that come up. So it's, from the business side, it's a really good thing. It's easy to find us.
So kerning is actually bringing two fonts together.
Exactly.
And it's not just about eliminating space. It's about making them more, you know, it's easier to read. Mm-hmm. You know, it's better. The kerning, you know, now that I think about it, I go, oh, yeah, okay, that makes sense. is there a sub-theme title for Kerning Cultures? Do you have like a, you know,
like a tagline
or a tagline that kind of expands on the title?
Nothing official, but I guess sort of the few words to describe it would be deeper stories from the Middle East is what we're trying to do. And so we've been live for almost a year. It'll be a year in 5 days. And we've told stories about, so most of our episodes start from these burning ambitious questions that our team has about the way the world works around us. And so one episode, for example, was exploring the phenomenon of brain drain from Egypt, which is endemic across the region. But Egypt has the highest rate of voluntary emigration in the Middle East and North Africa. And what's striking is that those who are leaving the country to go pursue opportunities abroad are young and highly educated. And so it sort of begs the question of, well, who's left to build the country? So we did a two-part series on just following the journeys of people who've decided to leave post-2011. And then one instance of a lady who decided to move back, even though she has a second passport. Or we've done episodes. A really fantastic conversation with a Muslim astronomer in Sharjah in the UAE, where he articulates really beautifully the intersection between religion and Islam for him, and sort of his life's work fighting against some of the archaic religious rulings when it comes to the sighting of the crescent for the start of Ramadan or Hajj, and things like that. So it sort of it spans culture, philosophy, history, science, entrepreneurship. It's every episode is different and comes from questions that we genuinely have about things that we're seeing in the region.
Now, is it hard to, go to a subject, an Arab subject like the astronomer in Sharjah, and explain to them that you want to do a podcast about this? That most of the things written about the Middle East are about politics and conflict, and people, do they wonder why are you approaching these, you know, different angles, different aspects, you know, or maybe wonder what your approach is, or, you know, is there like a resistance to getting people to talk?
No, not at all. In fact, and you probably have experienced the same thing as a journalist, but I'm struck every single time that it happens, and it happens every time we do an episode where people welcome us so openly. And we'll, you know, just like you and I today, we sit and talk for 2.5 hours and we don't even notice the time goes by.
I was just going to say that when you said hello to me, I just couldn't stop talking. It was over.
I think I always try to, and my team and my co-founder, we all do the same thing. We start an interview, we always start with the belief and the mission behind the stories that we're trying to tell. It is sort of a framing of how this interview, where this interview is coming from and the desire for it. And I think the people we speak with, that mission really resonates, the idea that we want to tell deeper stories, more complicated stories to paint a fuller picture of the Middle East. And so, no, we haven't been met with resistance. And then the other piece that is quite interesting that we only learned by doing this is sometimes when a media journalist would go for an interview with a video camera, they would be met with resistance. But because this is pure audio, people are a lot more open to sharing the stories for whatever reasons that might be, in terms of you'll never see my face. It can be a lot more anonymous this way. And, you know, we did an episode, the last one we did was exploring reconciliation efforts in Bahrain in the aftermath of the 2011 political crisis that essentially devolved into a sectarian conflict between Shia and Sunni. And that is such a difficult topic to address. And we weren't interested in talking about the politics or debating about who was right or who was wrong, but we really wanted to get at the essence of how do two people who were best friends, who are now broken by this national political crisis, how do they reconcile, and how do people reconcile, and how does the community move forward? And that was, I mean, we had a lot of people who didn't want to talk to us because the issue was so controversial, but the ones who did, we were able to maintain their anonymity because it was audio, and so they were a lot more open to even speaking with us because of that.
So you're not actually following the news media's trail. You know, in covering the Middle East, you're actually looking between the stories then? I mean, what drill down a little bit in terms of what kind of stories you're looking for. I mean, you're not looking for the headline news, but are you looking for like the layers behind the news? Are you looking for things between the news, consequences of the news, or is there no relation to the news?
So we were told by an advisor that it would be good for us to follow the news trail because that's sort of what's hot and people would be searching for those keywords, and when they come across us, that would be a great thing. But that hasn't really been a driving factor behind where we find stories at all. So the way that we hunt for stories is very much what is something that we would want to learn more about. And I was speaking with one of our producers, Alex, who's in London. He just moved from Dubai to London a few weeks ago. And we were talking this through, and I said one of the most brilliant things about working at Kerning Cultures and building this is that we can take these episodes as opportunities for us to really unpack and dig deep into issues that we want to better understand. And you use all of these interviews as a way to wrap your mind around these phenomena that we might not, you know, we don't know how else to do that. So that's one. The other way I would say, for instance, there's a story we're working on right now that I'm very excited about. There's an Afghani kite master. He's a fighting champion, a kite fighting champion, and he's been living in LA for the past 30 years. He fled Afghanistan when the Soviets invaded, and he's just an incredible, incredible man. And I sat with him for 4 hours, and he was telling me about his story and he was explaining the whole world of kite flying and kite fighting, which I know nothing about. And end to end, I don't imagine this story being longer than maybe 15 minutes. And it'll just be one slice of a person's individual story. But it's the type that really fires your imagination and can transport you to his world. And so there might not be any sort of overarching philosophical questions of how the world works. Like the first example I shared with you in terms of that's how we approach some of these episodes, is to unpack some of the things that we're wondering about. But the other way that we find a story or start to produce a story is just, it's a really good story, and it's something that we would want to turn to a friend to share. And it just sort of offers you a glimpse into another world, hopefully really powerfully.
Had it not been for the war in Afghanistan and the book that came out, and I think it was 2003, The Kite Runner,
yes.
I never would have associated kites with Afghanistan. What is, I mean, were you able to identify why are kites so important in Afghanistan?
Well, he said we just grew up with it. He said it was, he said we just, this was part of a childhood, and every single Afghan boy or girl you speak with will tell you they're a kite master as well. And it's just one of the national sports. And one of the funny things that he said is Afghanistan has been invaded multiple times, from Genghis Khan to, you know, the British, to all of these things. And so we're always warriors and we're always finding some way to fight. And so kites is just another mechanism as well. But something that he said that I'll never forget, which I find so beautiful, as another layer to that sort of warrior mentality. As you said, kite flyers and kite fighters are some of the most humble people he's ever met. And when I asked him why, he said, well, we're always looking up in the sky. We're always looking up to God when we fly our kite. How can you not be humble when you're always looking up at the sky? Which I found really incredible.
That is fascinating. That's interesting. And how often do you do the podcast? Do you have like a certain pace, deadlines, a length for the podcast? Tell us about the mechanics of your podcast. When they're produced, published, and also the website where people can go there and listen to them.
Sure. Well, the website is kerningcultures.com, K-E-R-N-I-N-G, cultures.com. And we're also wherever you download a podcast, so Google Play Music, Stitcher, the Purple Podcast app on your iPhone, everything. And the frequency, so we are very much learning what we're doing. And, we look for feedback from our listeners to help us improve and get better and better. And so when we started, there wasn't a consistency to the production because we didn't know how long it would take to produce things. So there was, I think in December, we released 4 episodes and then there was sort of silence for a few months. But now we finally have our head and our hands around the production cycle. So we release once a month. And the length of the episode is completely dictated by the quality of the content. And so we don't ever go longer than the story should be, but we don't ever want to cut it to an arbitrary time restriction just for the sake of that, which as a podcast, we don't have the restrictions that public radio has. And so some of our episodes, our longest episode was an hour, and that was my co-founder, Razan, did an amazing, amazing exploration. She went to Calais in the north of France to a refugee camp, and she interviewed a couple of Kurds who had fled Iraq a few years ago and had come to this refugee camp. It's actually a little bit west of Calais. It's in a city called Dunkirk. And Dunkirk is the sort of the last stop before you get to the UK. And so you have this phenomenon of this camp, which is predominantly filled with Kurdish refugees. And the sole purpose of this camp is to make itself redundant because everyone wants to cross over by night to the UK. And so that was just, there was a whole world there that she was uncovering. And so that's our longest episode. That's an hour. And then our shortest episode runs about 16 minutes. So it varies. It's just dictated by the story.
So the topic actually decides the length of how long the podcast interview may go.
Exactly.
And you have I wouldn't say it's eclectic, but it seems like there is something about Dubai and Lebanon that kind of feed into creativity when you look at the talent, the people. Why is it that so much you have a number of people from Dubai, and maybe there's no reason, maybe it's all coincidence, but, Dubai seems to have a special interest in communications that a lot of other areas of the Middle East don't. So to me, it seems natural, but, explain it for other people. Why is Dubai important in all this?
Sure. Well, Dubai started as where we were all based. So I just moved from there.
And why were you based there? Were you all in communications maybe?
Or was it
just coincidence? Just friends?
Just coincidence. Wow. So I followed my parents. My parents moved there about 5-6 years ago. And then I met Razan, my co-founder, and she's been a video journalist and a photographer for the past 10 years in the region. And to your question about Dubai being really important in terms of communications, it's one of the few places, and it's unfortunately becoming an increasing phenomenon, and of course it's, to varying degrees, but Dubai is actually quite lenient when it comes to the press and the media, and you have even the national newspaper is quite, it pushes the boundaries in ways that you'd be surprised for a Gulf country in certain topics. And so Dubai is sort of a hub of activity and certainly for the media, and most of the major international media outlets have a presence in Dubai. So that is one, and sort of that's Alex, our another producer, that's the reason he was in Dubai, things like that. And the rest of the spread of the team, one of the things that is so incredible and just reaffirming of what we're doing is it was myself and Ramzi, and Razan. So Ramzi is our sound engineer, and we were sort of the first the first people. And then everyone else who's on the team was a listener and then came and approached us and said, we want to participate in what you're doing, which is incredible.
That's great.
Yeah, and it's just, it's one of the few, I adore everybody on the team so much, and it's like, and the other thing that's kind of incredible, so Dana, for instance, is living in Beirut, and she was a journalist for the Wall Street Journal up until a few months ago, and I've never met her in person. Our entire relationship exists off of Skype, but I feel like she's such a close friend. And so there's something about this, and I think the reason that listeners became producers, there's something about all of us are feeling the same need for this type of content, and we want to create original content, and we're all very similar in that drive, and so it's just natural. The team is just so cool altogether.
Yeah, and I find it also interesting that you do something that a lot of Arabs don't do, and that's to real networking. You actually network with other people. I mean, your growth is an expression of that. I mean, here you have listeners that were interested and they jumped on board with you and you worked with them. And when you look at the, you know, you go to the website and look at, you know, the about and the team, you know, it really has a diverse collection of talent that I think is reflected in, you know, the podcast, which I enjoy a lot. But you also have many, you know, partners. I mean, you're not afraid to, you know, usually there's this competitive fear in the Arab world that, you know, it goes to the level of stores all the way up to, you know, media. Nobody wants to work together because they're afraid they're going to lose something. But the reality is networking actually brings talent together and everybody benefits. And I think that that's what I see in what you're doing. It's so against the grain.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, absolutely. And I feel, I mean, our partners are amazing and have become really good friends. And it also is strategic from our side. So we'd like to think that we're offering our media partners. So the way that the partnerships work is that they help distribute our content when we create it. I mean, we'd like to think that we're offering them content that they don't have and something, you know, a new voice and a unique take on a story. And then the other side of it is they have strong followings. And so for us as a startup and for us as a podcast with, you know, a modest but growing audience, this is a way to amplify our message in ways that we can't as small as we are. And so partnering is definitely the way to do that.
Yeah, I think it's phenomenal. And I think it's a different approach that more, you know, Arab groups could, you know, involve themselves in. It's something that they should do. I'm proud to be part of it. I mean, not only was I excited, you know, when I had a chance to talk to you when we first met, and after listening to the podcast, you know, there's a tendency for people like me, we feel like we're doing everything and it's so hard. And then to find that there's somebody out there that wants to help you, you know, it's like, wow, yeah. Okay, that's great. It's just, it's empowering. You know, that there are other people that want to work with you, and, you know, so I'm proud, you know, to be partnered with you. I know that you have a number of other partners on the website, Egyptian Streets, Fair Observer, and Radio Beirut, and I'm sure that's going to grow, you know, even more. And I hope it does, you know, strengthen the podcast to broaden the listening base, because podcasting, I agree, you know, there's something about radio and audio that still has a power. You know, from the, as we see the media changing, you know, the print media and the broadcast media is changing and moving more to the internet. But podcasting and radio and audio seem to be, you know, a great, you know, partnership with, you know, the internet. And I think, you know, the podcasts work real well. People can download them and listen to them at their convenience. And I think that's phenomenal. Is there anything else that you want to tell us about Kearney Cultures that I haven't asked you about that, you know, that's important that maybe we didn't touch on?
Not really. This was wonderful, and you know this, but we are very much honored to be working with the Arab Daily News as well. I think you've built an incredible media platform, and we're so happy to be a part of it. I guess the only last comment to share is that we love story suggestions from listeners and the audience, and so whoever might be listening to this, if you have any ideas for a story, however big or small, that you'd like to help us produce, or you'd like just to pitch, and then we can run with it. By all means, please, please reach out. All of our contact details are on our website.
Well, I'm going to make sure that I talk with my audio producer here, Ray Hanania, my media consultant, Ray Hanania, and the host, Ray Hanania, to make sure that we really kind of do a good job in producing this interview with you, because Heba, you're really an inspiring person. It's just good to meet somebody like you.
You know, as well, Ray. Thank you.
Yeah, for our listeners, we're talking with Heba Fisher. She is one of the interviewers and editors, I guess, or producers at Kearney Cultures. Their website is kearneycultures.com, and you'll find them on a number of websites, including Egyptian Streets, Fair Observer, and Radio Beirut, and of course on my news website, thearabdailynews.com. Listen, thank you so much, Heba. It was great talking with you.
Thank you.
I'm Ray Hanania, and this is my column commentary podcast. I have several websites online where you can get information, rayhanania.com, themediaoasis.com, thearabdailynews.com, and illinoisnewsnetwork.com. You can always friend me on Facebook at RG Hanania. And, of course, you can send me an email at rghanania@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.